1420 AM, W248DE, Wisconsin Rapids. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. Millions of Americans will feel intense heat this week as a heat wave moves into the Midwest and Northeast. Odyssey New York meteorologist Craig Allen.
Temperatures are going to be running about 20 degrees above average over the next several days, which puts it in the 90s, even near 100 degrees, and certainly the heat index will be up around or over 100 as we progress through the week.
Not much progress near Los Angeles, where hundreds of firefighters are trying to put out the post fire.
Firefighters in L.A. County are racing to contain the post fire as high temperatures, dry brush, and wind gusting up to 70 miles per hour fuel the fast-moving flames.
CBS's Carter Evans says it's burned about 16,000 acres. Russian President Vladimir Putin will visit North Korea this week. CBS's Kimmy McCormick.
It will be a two-day visit, according to North Korean state media, and it is the Russian president's first trip to the country in 24 years.
He hopes to expand their military cooperation. CBS News Brief, I'm Monica Ricks.
Seth here, host of Over the Back Fence. We're on the air live every Saturday from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m., taking your calls to buy or sell, talk local events, or whatever, only on WFHR.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The Republican National Committee wants to recruit 100,000 volunteer polling place monitors, poll workers, and lawyers in 15 swing states in November. Republicans say they'd safeguard election integrity, but critics say their real aim is to harass election workers and undermine trust in the vote. The U.S. Secret Service could release its final security zone for the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee any day now. Like a lot of Republicans, Senator Ron Johnson wants the protest zone moved farther from Fiserv Forum.
I'd like to see Mayor Johnson step up the plate and demand change as well. Again, this is in all of our best interests. Governor Evers ought to be demanding change as well as, obviously, the Republican Party is we're asking for this concern to be addressed.
Johnson on WISN-TV's Up Front. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WFHR and WIRI News, I'm Melissa Kay. Following are upcoming meetings in the listening area for Tuesday, June 19th. The Wood County Board of Supervisors will meet at 9:30 at the courthouse in the county boardroom. The Civil Service Commission will also meet at 9:30 at the courthouse. They'll be in room 114. The City of Wisconsin Rapids Common Council meeting will take place at 6 p.m. in the City Hall Council Chambers. The Town of Grand Rapids will have their Personnel Committee meeting from 3:30 to 4:30. In Portage County, the Highway Committee meeting, scheduled for 3:30, has been canceled. The County Board meeting will take place at 5 p.m. in the Portage County Courthouse in the County Board Chambers. In Adams County, the County Board meeting will be held from 6 to 7:30 at the Adams County Courthouse in County Boardroom A230. And that's what you need to know. I'm Melissa Kay, WFHR and WIRI News.
The Brewers with another series win. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers win a thriller 5-4 before a sold-out AmFam Field on Father's Day. It's the eighth time in a row the Brewers have beat the Reds in a series. Willie Adames with another dramatic home run in the sixth to take the lead on Bally Sports Wisconsin.
Contreras at second, Yelich at first. And Adames in the center field.
Really thought they were going to attack me with the fastball because last time I faced him, he was throwing me a lot of fastballs in. So I just tried to get a pitch closer to me, and, you know, I wasn't looking for it, but I recognized it and, you know, put the barrel on it.
That's Willie Adames. The crew in Anaheim tonight to take on the Angels. In golf, Bryson DeChambeau held on to win his second U.S. Open by beating Rory McIlroy.
I was a little lucky. Rory didn't make a couple putts that he could have coming in. I had an amazing up and down in the last. It's a dream come true.
That's Bryson DeChambeau. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
This is your hometown radio, Refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Showers and storms this evening, mostly cloudy overnight, lows low 70s. Warmer and more humid tomorrow, highs upper 80s and breezy. Afternoon and evening, storms return. Heavy rain, large hail, isolated tornadoes, and gusty winds all possible. It's 82 right now.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
Stop. That dog does not want to be petted.
A heads up before something bad happens.
You should not send that text.
Uh-oh.
Life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes, you can reverse prediabetes and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. To learn your risk, take the 1-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
Nightline with Pete Schwabba.
What is the worst movie franchise? Do you have one, Conrad?
What are your thoughts on Transformers?
I saw one Transformer movie. I think it was the first one. I didn't even know what the hell was going on.
I can't get into them anymore because, you know, it's the same every movie now.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be nice if you knew which Transformer. I know there's like testosterone and overload and whatever, testosterone.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights 7 till 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, Pat Kreitlow from Up North News Radio joins us at 10:33 in the 11 o'clock hour, a round of the good, the bad, and please tell me that's not true. Join us.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10. You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, educated educators talking education.
You know it. It's Monday. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education. Oh, man, Johnny, weekend, I'm back. Minneapolis, awesome conference. What was not awesome on my way back, 6 hours in the Minneapolis airport, 6 hours in the Philadelphia airport.
Oh, man, we won't say what airline you flew because I got to do some traveling this weekend. We don't want any issues with, you know, airlines coming and saying.
No, I was in the air for 3 hours, but in airports for 12 hours on my way home. So, woo.
Yeah. That's the grind. But hey, happy Father's Day.
Yeah, man. Back at you too. We did it. Yep. You know, survive Father's Day. I got some great grilling. No. When I say that, I mean, I had a great day. Well, it was tiring, though, because I had spent, like you said, you know, all that time in the airport. And I finally got back to my house on Father's Day at 2 o'clock Sunday afternoon yesterday. So long trip. And remember, I left there Saturday morning. So the fact that I didn't get back to my house, but got great gifts from my kids. Lots of grilling stuff, man. They know that I like to go out on the grill. So, you know. I got me one of those grilling sets that you kind of carry around in a little attaché case. I look cool.
Awesome. I got special bracelets made for me with my kids' names on them. That was a pretty awesome moment. There's like this whole Swiftie movement of these cool bracelets that I've been saying, hey, I need one of those. And they're like, Dad, they're not for dads. But they made me some bad ones, and that was really cool. Tim, man, we got some great guests tonight, and you and I could probably talk all
week. Oh, yeah, we could.
Because, you know, a couple of fathers here soaking up that action. But, you know, we got a lot to talk about. We had an awesome week last night. We got a banger week coming up. Before we get into it, though, let's just throw some props out to our friends at Minocqua Brewing Company. Busted Pencils is sponsored by the Minocqua Brewing Company, who are big-time advocates of public education and are always working hard to build community and make great beer. Minocqua Brewing Company is making Wisconsin great again, one beer at a time. Check them out at minocquabrewingcompany.com to see where you can buy their progressive beer. And, Tim, last time we were talking to our friends at Minocqua Brewing Company,
yes,
we had one of our guests tonight who was also there at the Minocqua Brewing Company. So let's get into the night.
Yeah, let's jump right in. Wisconsin Public Education Network, third Monday of the month, their regular spot. Welcome back, Heather Dubois-Bournain. Heather, and you brought a friend tonight, so jump in there. Tell us who you brought with us so we can get them. Now, I know it's not a new friend because Jenny's an old friend of the show, but let's get that introduction. Heather, how are you? And tell us all about Jenny.
I'm doing great. It's nice to see you both again. And thanks for having us back. I am pleased that my friend and colleague, Jenny Hopschulte, is here today. She works with the network as our Southeast Regional Organizer out of Milwaukee, and I will kick it over to her to say a little bit more about who she is and how she got involved in this work.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for having me. Thank you, Heather. I am a 20-year Milwaukee Public Schools parent and a parent advocate, and I got involved in public school advocacy by asking 20 years ago why the school funding formula was so broken in this state. And it's been a two-decades journey of learning, for sure. But I am still a proud Milwaukee Public Schools parent. I have one graduated student and one rising freshman.
Yeah, nice job, Jenny. Really appreciate it. Glad to have you here with the Wisconsin Public Education Network. Heather, though, before we get into the big story of the time, little promotion, Wisconsin WPEN and a conference coming up.
Yeah, we are super stoked about our fully leaded summer summit, which is going to be July 30 to 31st in Madison. So it happens to be our 10th anniversary of the event. We have been doing this work as a formal network for over 10 years now, and we're taking the opportunity to really dig in for two solid days of workshopping and strategizing around how we can get organized and take action together on day one. And then on day two, a full day of world-class breakout sessions on all kinds of exciting topics. You can learn more at wisconsinnetwork.org/summit and register for both days, just $40, and it includes lunch. What more can you ask from a dream event?
Nice. Appreciate that. Everybody out there, get registered. Let's see you at the Wisconsin Public Education Network. Okay, set the stage, Milwaukee. We're going to go at this so that we get through this. But there's some intense scrutiny now happening at the Milwaukee Public Schools. There's the possibility of a $50 million lag or some type of misunderstanding of how what was allocated to Milwaukee Public Schools from the state versus what the state is now saying should have been allocated. There could be a difference that could end up making Milwaukee Public Schools potentially need to pay back the state $50 million, up to $50 million. The budget, though, for the $1.5 million the board passed last week, coming on the success of passing that referendum that we said say yes to MPS. We spent so much time generating that. And again, the saying yes to that referendum was to just make sure that students and teachers get what they need, nothing extra. All right, Jenny, what's happening on the ground in Milwaukee?
I mean, to say that people aren't upset and hurt by what's happening would be an understatement, right? When the DPI's letter of kind of the final gauntlet was thrown, it became public right away that these reports had been not appropriately filed. And that really brought up a lot of people's taxpayers who just voted for our referendum and supported it, their ire, as well as people who work for the school district, families who utilize the school district every day, students and staff. People were really are perplexed by it still. And we're sort of sorting out the pieces in order to pick them up to sort of rebuild back better, I hope.
Mm. So, I mean, what the way to explain this is that so the state gives money through the Department of Public Instruction to schools and school districts across Wisconsin. And DPI now has issued a report saying, hey, Milwaukee, looks like we gave you more money than you were allowed to get. And the reason that they gave more money is what we're hearing is that the paperwork submitted by Milwaukee Public Schools to get this money may not have been submitted on time or at certain times. There's an accounting issue at play. Does that sound about right, Jenny?
There's an accounting issue at play and then also a delay of reporting. So some, I wouldn't call it malfeasance. I would say maybe some negligence on Milwaukee Public Schools' part to file their reports in a timely manner in order for these types of errors to be caught, along the way.
Well, I just, because I was looking at the story on this and, how the media frames this is that we want to be careful to not jump into and kind of turn this into some form of an ambulance chasing story. But Jenny, you came right out and said this, like, look, parents are concerned, teachers are concerned. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that I keep kind of seeing in the media reports is that, well, then why did the board approve their budget, and why didn't they wait until after this is sorted out with the Department of Public Instruction? I think there are good reasons why they voted and approved the budget, but that's where I keep seeing, it seems like the stickler is going, well, why did they approve the budget when the potential is that there's this upwards of $50 million that might have to be paid back?
Well, part of passing the budget is that it's statutory and it needs to be done by the end of June, right? So like part of it was doing the right thing to do it. The other piece of it is your budget isn't really finalized until October for any school district. So while our board said we agree that these allocations of funds should be what happens, we won't know until our third Friday student counts and how all the other equalization aids come through. So there is still time for this situation to play out. But really, statutorily, they had to pass their budget.
Heather, I see you want to jump in there.
Yeah, because this is where I want to complain about the whole process that Wisconsin public school systems have for how they do their budgeting. They're beholden to a system that forces them to write their budgets in advance of knowing how much aid they're going to get. And so there's always some amount of guesswork involved in this process. And in a budget year, this often happens before the budget has even been passed or finalized. And so they're really just guessing. They're doing it before even, you know, they get the estimates of what aid might be under certain conditions sometimes. And we hear districts complaining about that all the time. So, you know, this is all part of a larger system that really makes it challenging for districts to plan ahead in under good times. And when something like this happens, it just becomes, you know, exponentially more frustrating for everyone involved.
Well, I was sorry, Jenny.
Also chime in on this, how the timeline of things works out, because it actually works out locally in an even more grotesque way, because oftentimes in school districts have multiple schools, like Milwaukee has over 120, right? The individual principals are charged with creating their budget ask as well. And they base their staffing on these estimates or guesses, you know, and like you can't overguess because then you're going to hire people and have to let them go, right? Come September, you know, the third Friday. But you can't underguess because then where will you get people if all of a sudden you need to open another classroom? So the whole system of it is broken from the grassroots up.
Johnny, see your little comment there, really lifting the veil on the mystery there.
Well, I know for listeners, you know, we're familiar with this because we're constantly under the, you know, dictation of the budgets. And we've been in schools, we either worked in them as teachers, school leaders, or some capacity. We become familiar with the cycle of the budget and things. But this conversation, I think, for our listener out there who is always hearing us talk about school funding, this is really special because it's sort of explaining how it goes and some of the ins and the outs. So that would be cool, too. So if we have time, let's get into some of that, like, what's so important about that third Friday? What's so, like, for our listeners, this is a learning moment.
Yeah, big opportunity here. Wisconsin Public Education Network with us tonight, Heather and Jenny. Yeah, you know, first of all, promoting that big conference coming up in July, Wisconsin Public Education Network, and then looking at, okay, this development with the budget, Milwaukee Public Schools, upwards of potentially $50 million that might have to be paid, and the complexity that goes on with the school budget and all of this. I want to come back, though, too, when we come back after the break. Let's put this question about saying, you know, for teachers, it was really important that the board passed this budget and a lot of other people. We want to know why when we get back.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
Do you have a loved one in a nursing home? California mega millionaire Eric Hovde has some bad news for you. He doesn't think they have long to live. It's true. In a recent interview, Hovde said, if you're in a nursing home, you only have a 5-6 month life expectancy. Almost nobody in a nursing home is at a point to vote. That's shocking. But it gets worse. One of Hovde's companies is named a co-defendant in a wrongful death suit from an incident at a California senior living facility. He even referred to himself as an expert in the nursing home business. Yikes, that doesn't sound like the kind of expert we need. Call Eric Hubde at his California office, 714-730-4444. Tell him that Wisconsin seniors deserve to vote and get the care they deserve. Paid for by A Better Wisconsin Together Incorporated.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, home for Matt Nair on air.
There's always some reconciliation available here on Busted Pencils. It's fully leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education. Third Monday of the month, Wisconsin Public Education Network. It's their regular spot. We're joined with Heather, Executive Director, Jenny Hoffschulte, Parent MPS, WPEN member also. Budget, things that are going, if you've been watching the news in Milwaukee Public Schools, everybody's seeing right now the potential that there was upwards of $50 million that Milwaukee Public Schools may have to give back to the Department of Public Instruction based on some, I don't know if you say errors or just the process of how you report this. Also, at the same time, the budget for Milwaukee Public Schools, $1.5 billion, was passed last week. And, you know, other news to add to this was that, you know, there's this, the superintendent and the CFO look like they've left Milwaukee Public Schools. So it's presenting this situation to the taxpayer, to anybody looking, or say my neighbor who might be paying attention, trying to go like, what's going on? Hey, if you have questions though, 855-752-4842 is the number. You can jump in if you've been following along, if you have some insight, but we're trying to make sense of this. Now, we said for the teachers and the staff, because people are going, how in the world could they dare pass the budget when the reality of the situation is that they might have to owe all this money? Well, when it comes to at least the teachers and the staff, Jenny, there's a real good reason. You gave us one reason, number one, which is they have to, by statute, by the end of the month, pass the budget. But teachers and staff, what was at stake for them?
Well, job security, feeling like there's going to be a school district that exists, right? And that same thing is true for parents and their children. You know, where could this path lead? We're very used to it in Milwaukee, having lawmakers turn their gaze in a negative way in our direction and have a lot of things to say about MPS. We're you know, used to being under scrutiny. It's not uncommon for lawmakers from around the state to write really heinous type communications about MPS. This current situation's been no different, right? So what was on the line in some ways is a reputation. And in other ways, it's just another chink in this chain link in this chain that's constantly coming at MPS as being scapegoated in the district. People talking about it like a bottomless pit. I mean, these are kids and families and educators mm-hmm. in a system, but it's an opportunity, I think, to also to get the community involved in a different way. At MPS, it is a really big system, so this could be seen as an opportunity moment. And the other part about this is it's a real learning opportunity for everybody about the functions at central office, how the board actually operates, what does board governance look like, what is the board's role, and what are their duties in this situation like this, and then also like who is responsible at central office. You know, initially when this came down, there was a big question of it, like, was it negligence or malfeasance, right? Was someone doing their job ineptly or were they intentionally misleading? I think we don't totally know all of the answers to that yet, but that goes a lot into the trust of the community and the educators, what will happen on September 3rd when we come back to school on day one, right?
Right. Heather, when, you know, from Wisconsin Public Education Network, this is, as Jenny said, a learning opportunity. I was wondering how you or, you know, the membership might present this for the entire state.
Yeah, it's a tough situation in part, like Jenny said, because there's a lot we don't know yet, trying not to jump to conclusions. Grateful for all of the opportunities democracy affords us in our public school systems to be able to hold the public schools to this level of scrutiny, to be able to see all the books, to be able to attend all of the meetings. And so as hard as it is to hear some people say some of the things that they've been saying in the public meetings and to see the sort of level of anger and frustration amongst people, it's heartening to see people mad and showing up, right? Like Jenny and I always say, bring us your maddest mom. People should be mad, right? There's a lot to be mad at right now. Let's all get in the same room and figure it out. And let's find a way that we can both demand transparency and accountability for what's going on, allocate those resources to meet the actual needs of kids, and come together to make sure that we're fighting for better at the state level, because none of this came from nowhere, right? And so even though it might look from a distance like, one person or persons or people are personally to blame for what's happening, I mean, you'd have to have your head buried in the sand not to connect the dots to the way that Milwaukee has specifically been targeted to and under-resourced over the past several decades in this state, to the point where the needs of the community are just absolutely out of comparison with other communities in the state. That didn't happen by accident. That happened because of decades of choices that the state made to make sure that Milwaukee didn't have enough resources to meet the needs of its kids. And I'm not okay with that as somebody who doesn't live there but loves to visit. Right. Mm-hmm. Why aren't we doing right by all of the kids? Why is this district in such dire straits in the first place? Those are the questions I want answered.
Johnny Lupinacci.
Well, I think this is great, Tim. I mean, anytime our listeners can listen in on us all having the discussion, well, we're learning. And that's what we're doing here. We're learning with Heather and Jenny tonight about school budgets, about why it's so important, and about how it's how they unfold, really how it works. It's not like you would have a common knowledge. It's not like your home budget. Like, it's not like a budget at home or a budget, for a small company. It's a massive kind of piece of, I don't want to say legislative. It's an input from many different angles. Mm-hmm. And they overlap. Remember, school has to happen every year. So it's always interesting when the July 10th, and we'll do a little rundown on basic budget like cycle. We'll do that at the end of the show when we break it down, Tim. So our listener who's like, I don't know what they're talking about. School budgets seem to always be off. Mm-hmm. They're not always, but remember that is expensive. And I almost cringe, not at what, because of what Jenny said, but because I also hear it too often. These schools are just an endless pit of spending money. This is just constant. Well, what do you think? Like, we're educating kids, and it's not free. It doesn't, like, this is not only, and I hate to, I'm not reducing education to this, but I was like, when I'm talking to the neighbors, sometimes like, dude, do you know how much money you're saving now that you don't go to childcare anymore? Like, this is childcare. This is feeding your child. This is taking care of all of their learning needs. This is staffing an entire building. This is making sure transportation is part of it. This is all the moving parts, basically, for your young person to be living in our community by and large. And it costs money, just like the cost of living has gone up. Things have gotten more expensive. And in fact, you know what? If you want there to be good education, then we have to pay for the things that we know work. Like having smaller class sizes and having, we call them extracurriculars, but having all those things that are really essential to a good education. I love when we have the Wisconsin Network for Public Education with us, Heather and Jenny. They'll be back when we come back after the break.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, home for the Todd Allball Show.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The state of Wisconsin recovered about $33 million in fraudulent unemployment claims last year. The Department of Workforce Development says it looked into more than 2,300 identity theft cases and did almost 2,000 worker misclassification tax audits. DWD officials say they're intensifying their efforts to fight unemployment insurance fraud. The state Supreme Court is expected to issue a ruling soon about ballot drop boxes. University of Wisconsin political scientist Barry Burden.
The Supreme Court has considered a new case that would allow them again, and there is a new liberal majority that seems more inclined to permit those again as they were used in 2020.
Last week, justices gave local clerks flexibility about locating absentee polling places, but kept a ban on early voting vehicles in place. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WFHR and WIRI News, I'm Melissa Kay. It feels like summer already, though the first official day isn't until June 21st. You're probably already outdoors enjoying the beautiful weather. If you happen to find a tick on yourself or your pet, the Marshfield Clinic Research Institute is still asking you to send them in. So far, 3,200 ticks have been submitted. Most are the usual dogwood tick and the deer black-legged tick. However, they've found 9 brown dog ticks and 5 Lone Star ticks. Researchers say this is intriguing as it may indicate spread from their typical habitats to Wisconsin. These tick species carry diseases such as Rocky Mountain spotted fever and ehrlichiosis. You can help with the research by sending in ticks dead or alive. You can request a prepaid tick collection kit by emailing tics@marshfieldclinic.org or by calling 715-389-7796 extension 16462. And that's what you need to know. I'm Melissa Kay, WFHR and WIRI News.
I'm Pete with a 60-second showbiz beat. There will be a Practical Magic Part 2, according to the New York Post. The tabloid has Nicole Kidman on record saying she and Sandra Bullock are both returning for the sequel. The two actresses will revise their roles as Jillian and Sally Owens, two sisters who are witches and try to lift a curse that prevents them from finding love. The first film was released in 1998 and based on the 1995 book of the same name by Alice Hoffman. Oscar-winning writer Akiva Goldsman will write the script. There was a notable brat missing from Bratz, the new documentary by Andrew McCarthy. The phrase Brat Pack describes a group of actors from the 80s, which included Rob Lowe, Emilio Estevez, Demi Moore, Ali Sheedy, and Molly Ringwald. McCarthy recently addressed Ringwald's absence from the film, saying that when he contacted her, she said she'd just like to keep looking forward. It was later revealed she would have loved to take part in the project, but saw a script titled Bratz and thought the documentary was about bratwursts and was too embarrassed to say anything after the fact. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 7 to 9 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Showers and storms this evening, mostly cloudy overnight. Lows, low 70s. Warmer and more humid tomorrow. Highs, upper 80s and breezy. Afternoon and evening, storms return. Heavy rain, large hail, isolated tornadoes and gusty winds all possible. It's 82 right now.
Wisconsin Public Schools open doors for all students. I'm Peggy Wirtz-Olson, a Wisconsin teacher and president of the Wisconsin Education Association Council. Public school educators and families work together to reach, teach, and inspire Wisconsin's next generation of leaders. As we head back to school, we hope you'll join us. WEAC, we teach, we inspire. Find out more at weac.org.
Do you catch yourself quoting TV shows like that? It could win you a free meal and make you our next star of the day with Culver's. Join the morning show on WFHR every Friday.
What you talking about, Willis?
My name's James, and I'm telling people every Friday we'll play a theme song or a quote from a movie.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give it.
You call 424-2600, give the correct answer, and you'll win a family pack from our Wisconsin Rapids Culver's.
To the Batmobile.
Join the morning show every Friday for Culver's Star of the Day.
I love it when a plan comes together.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody, Todd Albaugh. Join us next time when our executive producer of Civic Media, our friend, our colleague, and guru of brewers, Luke Mathers, joins us for Tuesday Tangents at Lukester.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
Welcome back. Here we are, Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. It is Monday, we have a special Monday once a month with the Wisconsin Public Education Network, WPEN. Heather and Jenny joining us tonight. We are deep in talking about school budgets, the stuff happening in Milwaukee, and really kind of getting into this. We left it off at the break with some of the complications of school budgets and why they're so messy, and just thought it might be nice to come back and talk about scale, you know, because there's a big difference between districts. Some districts have like a high school, a middle school, three elementary schools. You know, they may be a small, what we call a small district, or even our suburban larger districts are kind of less moving parts. Can you tell us a little bit more about the scale of Milwaukee Public Schools?
Well, as I mentioned to you gentlemen in the break, you know, when we lay out data across the school districts, and we have over 400 school districts across the state of Wisconsin, independent school districts, Milwaukee Public Schools has more students that live in identified homelessness, just over 5,000 every year, which is more than 400 of the school districts in the state have in total enrollment, right? You know, our school district has about 20% of students with various degrees of special education needs. And in some schools, because, you know, students go to school and we have choice within, even within our public school district, some schools run in excess of 40% of students with special needs, or 100% of students, you know, living below the federal poverty line.
Well, and on that too, though, just the scale, Johnny, you set that up by saying, yeah, you know, I mean, even if you're from a suburban district, you might have the sense of a high school, maybe a couple middle schools and some elementary schools. Jenny, you said 120 distinct campuses within the Milwaukee public school system?
Yeah, give or take.
Wow. Okay.
And Tim, think about that. And for listeners, like in general, this isn't just like, oh, 122 places where there's teachers teaching kids. And yeah, we got to pay some salaries. These budgets include transportation, you know, buses and drivers, facilities, the whole building maintenance aspect of it, the whole campus. So we say 122 campuses. That's just not a building. That's parking. That's all the sports facilities. That's all those things. Energy. The school has to stay lit. Heat. You know, the cool in the summer, it's hot. You know, it's hot in parts of Wisconsin right now. It's real cold in other times of the year. Right. Health and safety. We got school nurses. We got all kinds of school security fund on the budget. Instruction. Students have to have qualified teachers. Thank you, Wisconsin, for having qualified teachers. I mean, this is a banner of our state. These are stalwart aspects of good public education. It's not cheap, but it's worth it. On top of that, you got curriculum, staff development, food services, library services, counseling services, school leadership support. You got to pay the principal and all the school, you know, assistants to the principal. You got everybody. It's a job for them, right? So all the adults that go to that building are going to work too, and our kids and those adults are going to building. So imagine our operating costs for one company, and then multiply that by 122 facilities in the area, and include transportation, because I have never worked anywhere that paid for the transportation of all the people coming and going. So it's an expensive endeavor. So when I hear $1.5 billion, of course, those news bites, they hit like in real shocking ways, especially when we're, you know, most of us hardworking people are feeling the squeeze. So we hear those news bites, and that's where I'm going to go a little bit. It's like, I think it's just it seems a little bit shady, a little sus, to drop something like this in mid-July. July 10th is when budgets get all reconciled. Then to come out the gate all of a sudden, find out 1.5, and then pointing fingers at a district. So I'm just curious, like Heather, Jenny, like the timing, the message. It's like, ooh, see, it feels like a little shade.
I'm not going to speak to the rationale for the Department of Public Instruction and how they did release that final letter. But I mean, it has come to bear that publicly that there was several attempts at trying to get this report corrected and to get appropriate information. What has been sort of interesting, and I'm sure public records requests will eventually help us fill in a timeline in a little bit better way, but the board really seemed to be caught off guard by the whole situation. So it's unfortunate if during this whole span of time that DPI was trying to get this report and these corrections made, that no one ever tried to loop the board in in any meaningful way, right? For them to understand the gravity of this documentation, and then also the impact of its being late or, you know, misfiled.
But even that, the way you just said that, Jenny, is that learning opportunity you just presented to us, because I can hear right now, because I see the media, it's like, well, what was the board doing? Well, hey, it seems, at least at this point, that the communications that if some of these reports were late based on that $50 million that might be owed back, that was a communication within potentially some of the district administrators, not the board, potentially, and saying so, like, some of the board members felt very caught off guard with this. Does that sound about accurate?
I mean, that's the what I know to be the public facing information. Yes. I mean, I don't know anything secret, but I do believe that our board felt caught off guard, definitely. And a lot of people were left wondering, and even during the meetings, the public meetings since, just wondering why they hadn't been approached.
Mm-hmm. Heather, you got any? Go ahead, Johnny.
I'm curious, because here we are. This is like public education. We're just talking about, we are, you know, fighting for public education. It's like a unified front. We are fighting for public education. And, you know, I just wonder, these things kind of, like, the way they're being reported, the reading that's coming out of Milwaukee, and the pointing fingers about it. And then, that, you know, it just, like, throws fuel on the flames of that sentiment. Well, schools just spend lots of money and lots of money. And it's like, well, they spend the money there that they need to educate kids for our democracy, for our communities, for their futures, for all of our futures. So Heather, I'm, you know, as someone who has got a 10,000 foot view of Wisconsin and public schools in general, and you're like dialed in on our, like, the solidarity we need, you know, I just wonder your comments on this moment, like how can we stay together on this, not be divided?
I think that's really the question that a lot of people are asking themselves right now. Again, people are interested and upset for good reasons. Like, there's a lot to unpack here, and I don't want to come across as, you know, being an apologist or give the impression that we don't need to, you know, fully, wholly, deeply scrutinize, like, whatever got us here. But what I do know is that the way this moment is being exploited to pit our public institutions, the institutions that we trust the most to take responsibility for educating our kids, against each other in this moment. And the way that, you know, this fight is kind of playing out on a public stage is just playing right into the hands of those who have been actively, vocally, forcefully, publicly working to undermine the success of Milwaukee students for decades. Hmm. And these same players are right there in the room when these conversations are happening. They are behind op-eds that are getting written. They are, you know, pulling a lot of strings, connecting a lot of dots, making, you know, lots of accusations, and, you know, really trying to exploit this moment to further erode public trust in our institutions. Well, meanwhile, this district, this massive district that serves, you know, 75,000 kids, is just trying to make sure all those kids are okay, right? The board is busy taking care of kids and trying to meet them where they are and, you know, do the enormous work that they've been elected to do. And I think that a certain amount of grace is required in these moments to both make sure we have the facts, you know, before we rush to judgment, to trust the elected officials who earned our votes by standing up for the right thing, who you know, by and large on this board, have long track records of being champions for public education, for full transparency, for meeting the needs of kids and fixing a funding structure that has been grotesquely unfair to Milwaukee students. You know, and trying to find ways that we can work together. I want to be a partner in that from a statewide point of view. And I know that Milwaukee folks really need people to try to help them understand what's going on before we rush to judgment too quickly.
You know, what comes across here that really sounds strong is this is why we have public schools. This is the biggest reason for public schools. Johnny?
Well, no, man, that's Tim. I was just giving you the high five for the 5 minutes till our break, but you can go to me. I agree. And I really love, Heather, you
kind of tying it together that way for us to be thinking about, let's gather the facts and let's lean on that democratic core value that is part of our institution. Sometimes it's messy, but we trust one another. So that full transparency that Heather talks about is so important because things are difficult. We're talking about a massive district. Budgets are going to be sometimes up, sometimes down, especially when they're so tight. They're likely going to maybe come in under. Let's figure out why, and let's have that transparency so that we can continue to trust one another. That's a stalwart of a strong democracy.
Yeah.
But that's also, Tim, why we really hammer against the privatization of schools and charters and stuff that don't have that accountability.
Right.
It's like, sometimes the fingers, and what I said, and both Jenny and Heather gave such a unifying response when I was kind of lofted up a low blow about, like, it seems a little shady to point fingers. You know, it sometimes happens. I can say it from the outside, like, hey, let's not point fingers. And Jenny and Heather are saying, no, we don't want to point fingers. We want to open the books and we want to figure out how we can build trust, because the trust is there. Somewhere there is a shortfall. We'll figure it out together and we'll correct it. Educating kids costs money. We already know we underfund it. So we're going to figure out what we need to get it going and to take care of all these children and to do it openly and transparency. Now, on the flip side, why it's so dangerous to point fingers and be like, they're under budget. It's like, all these charter schools' books are closed.
Nobody sees.
The board just knows they're under budget and they fix it and correct and go back and correct it. So transparency is always going to show the good and sometimes the mistakes. I won't even call them the ugly, because making mistakes is what we do sometimes when we're learning to grow, and especially what we do when we're taking care of children. Because you know what that means? That means that those school leaders most likely and all those decision makers needed to, in the moment, take care of people and children in their community. And it ended up costing more than we projected, likely because someone projecting it didn't really care about those kids. And I'll say it, this is the part that breaks my heart about Milwaukee, but it resonates around the country. Who are the children in Milwaukee? Where is the highest concentration? Jenny kind of talked about the high needs, the people who are experiencing poverty at high rates, right? Are Black and brown children in higher concentrations than in our predominantly white suburbs and parts of the state? So while it may not be some explicit sort of like white supremacist movement to really stick it to Milwaukee, you know, it resonates with that kind of systemic racism. Let's get with it. Let's open the books. Let's figure things out together and let's trust one another. Why stuff from Jenny and Heather? And I love it. Love it.
Heather, a little closing statement there.
I just want to echo, I guess, what Johnny said. Because it's so important to keep in mind that we're talking about kids here. When we withhold resources from our kids, we are basically forcing our children once again to pay the price of mistakes of adults, regardless of where those mistakes came from. When what we should be doing is looking for ways to make sure that we are providing every sort of support that we can at the state level to meet the needs of our largest district. The entire state depends on a thriving Milwaukee. The ways that the Milwaukee economy drives the rest of the state are fantastic, amazing. It's a world-class city. I mean, we know that wonderful things are happening throughout the district. There are all kinds of, amazing programs going on, like lots of resources. They've got a robust and thriving community schools program. They've got all kinds of, offerings at the school and local level. And instead of pitting our systems against each other and, punishing the district for whatever this mistake was, we should be looking for a way to move forward stronger and better and position kids to thrive rather than get further in the way of their success.
Now, Wisconsin Public Education Network, Heather, Jenny, man, thank you guys for busting pencils with us tonight. When we get some more, though, too, we want you guys coming right back as soon as this news. In fact, we'll leave this open. Wisconsin Public Education Network, Jenny, more news, you guys can bring it on. Johnny and Tim are going to break it down when we get back.
Locally grown radio, WFHR.
Are you and your family weather ready? I'm Terry Barr. Wisconsin weather is ever changing, and all of us with Civic Media believe awareness can make a difference. Our weather ready stories will offer the information you need. Here's meteorologist Brittany Merlot.
Consider yourself a snowbird with property in the south, or just like to vacation there. You'll want to keep an eye on what's predicted to be an active hurricane season from now through the end of November. Forecasters say that there's an 85% chance of above the normal number of hurricanes, especially in the Atlantic Basin. Here's what it could look like. 17 to 25 storms, 8 to 13 of them becoming hurricanes, and 4 to 7 of those could be major. If you're wondering why, temperatures in the Atlantic Ocean are near record warmth, and La Niña conditions are developing, and both of these support the formation of tropical storms. No matter where you go, it's information to keep you and your family weather ready. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, home for Up North News Radio.
I'll ask you.
There it is. Tim and Johnny coming back, break it down, busted pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education, third Monday of the month, Wisconsin Public Education Network in the house, Executive Director Heather with us, and bringing an ally working through the Milwaukee Public Schools, parent Jenny Hoffschulte was there. Yeah. Johnny, so yeah, you know, there's some confusion, maybe that's the word, I don't know, but Milwaukee Public Schools, the big budgeting, $1.5 billion total budget that passed, potentially upwards of $50 million maybe the state gave Wisconsin or gave Milwaukee Public Schools, all of this, you know, and it made me think, though, too, of going, yeah, and guess what? You know why we know this? Because it's our public school system, and this type of transparency is what you voted for and what you get. This isn't a moment to then turn this into an opportunity to advocate for privacy, because understand the privatizers that are going to use this to their advantage, saying, look, you know, nothing good happens in Milwaukee Public Schools. This is why we need to turn it over to unaccountable privatizing people. Really? That's your pitch? Your pitch is going to be that we need less transparency. We need a bunch of micro private schools that can do whatever the heck they want, because knowing what's happening, the transparency that came about that brings us to this ability to talk about this, really, you're going to vote that? Potentially people are going to use this as a stick to beat up public schools? This should be why you champion public schools, because this is the transparency you get. Johnny, that's all I'm saying.
Well, yeah, Tim, I think it's great. I mean, here we are talking about, you know, the importance of public education, and public education costs money, even though technically it should be, you know, free for kids, like, I mean, and families that live in our communities, it's not free. It comes from somewhere. We fund it, right? And just as we're talking about school budgets, just for a listener out there, I know, because there was some adjusting it took for me to understand sort of the cycle of a school budget. So when we're talking about a school budget, we're talking about that basically this differs a little bit from state to state, but it's pretty similar everywhere, is that it depending on the fiscal year ending, and that's usually around July 1, right? Like sometime in July, the fiscal year ends and essentially a new budget begins. But if you think about it like that, school typically goes from fall to early summer. And in the fall, districts begin to discuss the priorities. They sort of begin thinking about what they're going to need, what's new stuff. By midwinter, you know, they are meeting and adopting the budget calendar, reviewing guidelines. They're going over all the things on the budget. They're looking at, like, where might we be off a little bit? What's some of the stuff that's going to need to change for next year? Estimates of salaries, benefit increases, adjustments. You know, that's like midwinter, really early spring. And then also the same time, this used to be like steadfast February. By March, we'd know, because the governor would submit the proposed state budget. Mm. Right. And so by early spring, midwinter, like usually February, March, right, district staff knows that evaluation and evaluates and revises its preliminary budget. So it's doing all kinds of reconciling
right? So that's why I said, like, hey, how come we're finding out about this in July, right? So there's going to be some figuring out to do, because that's typically something that's starting to really surface in early spring, late winter. So then by the end, we have a final review in spring, right? And a public hearing to precede the adoption of the next year's budget. So then, like, the next year's budget is set before the fiscal year closes, then it closes. So, and, you know, that gives the kind of cycle, the life cycle of a school budget to listeners. And I know for me, I was always sort of like mystified by, like, when would we know? What do you mean we don't know how many teachers we're going to be able to hire back next year? Like, why can't we know these things? Right. What do you mean we don't know if we're going to have extracurriculars? Like, these are things we're planning for. What do you, and we used to always know by the end of February, sometimes latest March. That's been pushed out further and further, and it's kind of a sad thing. Tim, I'm with you. If you're a school and you're serving the public, right, your books should be open to everyone. Absolutely. You should be part of that same process. It's only fair, right? It's like, I can't decide that I'm going to play, you know, hockey, but, you know, I'm going to change the rules, and some guys are going to be able to play with a ball and not wear gloves, and they can, you know, it's like, that's the kind of game. Yeah. If we're having public schools, they got to all play by the same rules. You know, otherwise it creates this mess. And I couldn't agree with Heather and Jenny more. Like, loved their sentiment to stand up warriors for public education, right? Saying, hey, let's come together. Let's figure this out, because it costs money to care for children. And if children needed more that year, let's figure out why and let's make sure we have that. But I'll tell you what, come on, folks. If children need something, remember, Tim and I make jokes about this, but we're serious. We taught wants and needs.
Absolutely. So again,
back to that second, third grade lesson, wants and needs. Children needed something different. And that doesn't shock me. Coming out of COVID, wherever you are at in this country, young people, all right, are by and large going to be okay. But right now, they're not okay.
No.
We need to support them in multitude of ways. And guess what? Things got more expensive too. So spending money to care for children, never a bad idea. We'll keep up to date with this. Tim, I got to ask you, though, before we close. Quick one, man. Quick one.
Okay.
Settle a beef.
Okay.
I'm confused, and I don't know if it's sarcasm or not, because I like the sarcasm in it. But L.A. Tom, my man, our guy, he said, Johnny keeps saying Democratic Party, the Democratic Party. And he's saying it's Democrat Party.
Right.
But I'm like, huh, is he? Because I believe it's the Democratic Party. And Sherry from Horicon, what's up? You always saying hello to us every evening. We love that you're listening. So maybe Sherry knows the answer. Sherry, post it. Give us a comment.
Yeah.
Tim, I'll leave that for you, because I know you got to talk about some things and close us out tonight. But I'm going to leave that for you. This week's going to be a wild week. And I hope by the end of the week that I know whether or not I should say the Democratic Party or the Democrat Party. The Democrat Party sounds colloquial and like sarcasm to me, because it's like you call someone a Democrat. Right. But I believe it's the Democratic Party or the Democratic candidate. But
this is
a beef for me.
I'm not going to totally settle it for you right now, because I can tell you, though, that there are some Republicans who like to throw out Democrat as a pejorative, the Democrat Party. They like to throw that out there. So, yeah, I don't know. Is L.A. Tom throwing a little bit at you? Oh, Johnny, though. Man, what a week. But
a huge one.
Great, great week, though. And again, Busted Pencils, too, really wants to thank everybody for listening, and especially Minocqua Brewing Company, because Busted Pencils is sponsored by Minocqua Brewing Company. They make Wisconsin great again, one beer at a time. Johnny Lupinacci, Busted Pencils, man. Anya on the boards, Heather, Wisconsin Public Education Network. Everybody, tomorrow, Horace Mann. I'll give you a little hint. See y'all tomorrow.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids home of Nightlight with Peach Wabba.
Pat Kreitlow.
On Tuesday's National Splurge Day, we talk about what little luxuries you add to your life right now and the big ones you'd get if you could really splurge.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow, weekday mornings starting at 6.
Crop insurance is designed to protect your livelihood, but gaps in your coverage can still leave you exposed. A hail insurance policy through Ag Country Farm Credit Services fills those gaps. Unlike multi-peril policies, Crop Hail offers coverage on an acre-by-acre basis and can protect the full value of your crops. Contact your local Egg Country office to learn more. Egg Country. Focused on ag. Focused on you. Egg Country is an equal opportunity lender and provider.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us. This is locally grown radio. WFHR 1320 AM. W248 DE Wisconsin Rapids. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.